This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
People living in the center of town might find service cuts and fare hikes inconvenient or annoying, but low-income people are the most affected when regional transportation budgets are squeezed, because they live in the neighborhoods with the least access and because they are the most reliant on public transportation. Even so, despite TriMet's 2012 round of budget cuts, many people riding public transportation say that Portland has a great transit system.
I go everywhere on a bus around the city most of the time.
Quincy is retired, so he doesn't commute to work, but rides the bus to get to his medical appointments. He doesn't want to give his last name. He says he's happy with Portland's transit system.
This is the best transportation system and of all the different cities that I've been in. It's got a really good transportation system here. Excellent.
Quincy's only critique is that there are no buses running in the middle of the night. He says Portland used to have a night bus service called the Owl.
There's a lot of people that go into work and getting off at work after 2 o'clock at night. And I'm sure that if they found out that there was an Owl running, that they would probably use it.
Valerie Gilstead also rides the bus. She moved to town from Philadelphia last summer.
The bus system in Philly is significantly worse. It's infrequent. It's much dirtier. It's cheaper, though, so that's nice. But the public transit in Philadelphia is some of the worst I've ever ridden, and Portland is great for public transit.
Valerie rides the bus every day to work, which takes her about 45 minutes. She likes reading on the bus. Right now, she's almost finished with Anna Karenina.
I'm just reading it for fun. I studied Russian in college.
Valerie lives in Northeast Portland, which is very accessible and just a quick bus or max ride from downtown. Every block in Northeast has a sidewalk, and it's easy to get where you're going on foot, by bike, or by bus. She has nothing but good things to say about riding the bus in her neighborhood.
I'm very satisfied. It's always on time, you know, at least around rush hour, it is.
She also thinks the price, $2.50 for a single transfer or $5 for a day pass, is fairly reasonable. It's an even better deal if you plan ahead and buy a monthly bus pass.
It's a little high, but I do like that they have a monthly pass, which I don't have. But, I mean, I would save a lot of money probably if I bought it. If you ride twice a day, 5 days a week, I mean, you're breaking even. And then you have the freedom to ride sort of whenever you want.
Elena Wall is also pretty satisfied with the transit system.
I think it's a great bus, actually, and my son loves taking the bus.
Elena says taking the bus through the Woodstock neighborhood to get her son to preschool is a good deal because it's more cost-effective for her and her family. She also says it's an environmental choice.
Well, my husband and I actually have another car, but he takes it to work. And we decided not to get a second car to do this just for this commute since I work at home. And that was part of the reason why, was that we could help the environment.
Jordan Davis is a student at Portland State University. She takes a bus to school and to her waitressing job.
Actually, I grew up in Florida, so I moved out here 2 years ago to go to PSU.
She says in a town where she grew up, the transit system was pretty much non-existent.
Portland's public transit is amazing compared to what I had, which was like a trolley system that I never rode on.
Transit works well for people that live close to the center of town. They have a number of different buses and trains to choose from, and wait times are pretty short. The price of bus fare is definitely cheaper than paying for car payments, gasoline, and insurance. But the farther away from downtown people live, the less satisfied they are with the bus system and the less they feel like they're getting their money's worth. Susie Thurston lives in Southeast, but works all the way out in North Portland. The number 75 bus is her lifeline, but she also has to transfer the number 72. Susie usually passes the time reading.
When I go to work, it takes me an hour each way. So if I ever didn't have a book, I would go nutty.
The buses she takes to work are very dependable, but it's when she tries to go other places that the bus system stops working for her.
One thing I'm concerned about, by the way, is The 17, I have doctor's appointments in Northwest, and the 17 used to go like right all the way there. One bus, I could go all the way there. And now they moved it so the 17 goes to Northeast. And there's really no buses now that I know of that go to Northwest, except for the 77, which doesn't even stop downtown and runs every half an hour. And it's really difficult to get there now.
She can appreciate that TriMet is running on a tight budget, but she also thinks that service cuts are going too far.
Now, I mean, I know that they had to make cutbacks, but at a certain point, you throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, if buses run too infrequently, then it's just not convenient for people to take them, you know? And the ultimate goal is to serve the public, you know? And at what point are you being economical, and at what point are you providing poor service, you know?
Like Jordan Davis, Derek Espinosa is also a PSU student. Jordan has a great commute because she lives in inner southeast Portland. Derek, on the other hand, lives in Hillsborough, a suburb southwest of Portland, where getting around is a real challenge and getting worse all the time.
There seems to be more delays now. They're getting trains backed up. The buses are more expensive and they're cutting routes. It's not as much noticeable here in Portland, but in Hillsborough, they've actually cut routes that I've used to take to get to places, so it's harder to get to where I need to go when not going to school.
He also finds himself with extremely long waits, making it difficult to get anything done.
Now the wait for the bus that I need to take is about an hour if I were to go anywhere I needed to go in Hillsborough. And they've cut routes. It's impossible for me to get to certain places on Baseline, Cornell, in Hillsborough.
It's getting to the point where he often can't rely on TriMet to get him where he needs to go.
Now I'm more asking friends for rides or sometimes even taking a taxi over there in Hillsborough.
Debbie Schwartz rides the bus every day, but she isn't as personally affected by transit cuts because she's pretty mobile. Still, she's worried about how service cuts are affecting elderly and disabled people who have trouble getting around.
I'm a full-time TriMet rider. I don't drive at all. And I've noticed over the last several years that TriMet has made a lot of expansions to MAX and stuff, which overall I think is fantastic, except that the expansions they've made haven't really taken into account the needs of people who only use TriMet and may have some mobility impairments and things like that. For example, the MAX that goes downtown has caused the bus mall downtown to have the stops much farther apart than they used to be. So somebody older, maybe who uses a cane, who used to be able to go downtown and change buses and only walk a block or two, might now have to walk 5 or 6 blocks, and that might be enough to keep an older person at home. And it's great for commuters who also drive to keep their cars off the road. But I think it's important for TriMet to prioritize the people who can only use TriMet and people who may have limitations in their ability to walk and get around in other ways.
Cameron Johnson, on the other hand, is transit dependent. He doesn't have a physical disability, but because he's autistic, he makes frequent trips to the pharmacy.
I actually was able to get an honored citizen's card because of doctor's appointments I have to make. I actually am bipolar and autistic, so relying on the bus is something that both helps my mental wellness and helps me get medication that I need to maintain that. So technically I qualify for an honored citizen's card because otherwise I wouldn't be able to afford the bus and I'd be homebound.
The honored citizen's pass costs $27 a month. But Cameron says even that is a stretch for his budget because he's unemployed. He says this month a friend of his is buying his pass for him.
Luckily, a friend's going to cover me for this month because she's really awesome like that, but otherwise, I would definitely be homebound again.
Cameron was homeschooled and recently has been looking for a job. He's also a photographer. He lives in outer southeast Portland, but on Saturdays, he likes to take the 4 downtown to go to the library. He wishes the 4 came more often. He never knows exactly when the bus will come, and when it does come, it tends to be pretty crowded.
It can get really crowded, and even outside of rush hour, because the bus will be late and there will be more people gathered up waiting for it. And sometimes the bus will pass it up and you'll have to catch the one behind it because it's running that late. But sometimes it'll be it'll be tolerable. People won't be pressed against the walls, and people will have places to sit down. Usually it's during the rush hours and during late buses, which both are pretty common.
Ron Lee lives in Oregon City, a town about half an hour's drive from Portland, and he works in Portland as a caregiver. Wait times are long in outer southeast Portland, but they're even longer for people going to and from Oregon City.
About an hour, hour and a half. It just depends on traffic.
And does it come pretty frequently by where you live?
No, I wish it did.
How often does it come?
Every hour.
And what would work better for you?
15 minutes.
So what time do you typically take it in the morning?
10 o'clock, because I have to be there by noon, and I usually make it by a little, 12:15 or so.
Are you late sometimes?
No, because I have an agreement with my boss, and they know that I take the bus, and so they are okay with it.
But not everyone is so lucky. Cameron Johnson says taking the bus has affected his job opportunities.
I haven't been to many job interviews, but there have been jobs that I couldn't take because the bus simply wouldn't be able to get me there in time to start. So I've had to turn down jobs in the first place that I would have a chance at because I couldn't get feasibly commute there. They wanted me to start at 6, so there'd be no way I could feasibly make it in time without leaving at 4 and getting there 20 minutes late.
Cameron says a temp agency found him a job in Beaverton, a suburb west of Portland, but the bus he would have to take to get there starts running at 6:30 a.m. Cameron isn't just a transit-dependent rider, though. He's also deeply involved in transit activism, working to make a positive change in his community. He's an active member of the transit justice group OPAL, Organizing People, Activating Leaders, where he works with the organization to organize bus riders into a force to influence TriMet's policies.
We started working on behalf of making the service usable and feasible for transit-dependent people like myself. And I realized that a lot of what's going on isn't just unfair. It's a lot of BS going on in there. And throughout my work at OPAL, I have both become very jaded to what TriMet does and very empowered to what the people can do.
There are major problems with Portland's transportation system, but OPAL, the environmental justice organization based out of Southeast Portland that Cameron is a part of, is working to solve them. By bringing bus riders together in their transit justice program, Bus Riders Unite, to protest fare hikes and service cuts. OPAL reaches out to poor people and people of color who are most likely to be affected by service changes. They are especially focused on outer Southeast Portland, which has the worst bus service in the city, and where the community is largely made up of African American, Hispanic, Vietnamese, and Russian people. They hold lively meetings with homemade cookies, lots of applause, and Spanish translation, because many Bus Riders Unite members are not native English speakers. OPAL knows how to have a good time, but they also know how to get stuff done. Last June, they had dozens of members testify in front of the TriMet board, which makes all of the major decisions about the bus system.
But there are certain risks to my health and safety that, frankly, I'm going to have to take. I have a very limited budget. I cannot pay 1/8 of that budget for a monthly bus pass. The number of rides that I am able to take is based on my budget. You will not be able to see any more money from me personally for more rides. I will have fewer rides. So I personally am that individual who composes that little statistic about losing rides as fare increases. Hello.
My name is Bill Boyd, and I'm a supporter of OPAL, and I work at JOIN, which is a service organization that helps people move from homelessness into permanent housing. And while affordable housing is our main goal, affordable mobility is critical to helping people find work, getting better, getting to school or their doctor, or getting to the store. And without affordable mobility, people can become trapped, isolated, and their success becomes threatened.
My organization serves immigrant refugee community members who most of them rely on public transportation. the first thing that the refugee population, when they arrive, the first thing that they do, they learn how to ride the bus. They learn how to ride the trainings. That's their first step for integration. I think there's no one is an evolution that we're having a difficult time as a country, as a state, as a community. I think also that you, all of you committed, and some of you I know that I served and with different meetings and different stakeholder meetings, and I know you care, and I know you care about equity. I think your statement and your website, your dedication to equity, is important. But I think also if you look back in this group today and see who is voicing consent, it's the low-income community, it's people of color, immigrant refugees. I think that's an equity equation.
Right now, they're working on fighting to keep free bus passes for Portland Public School youth and the campaign for a fair transfer to extend the length of transfer tickets from 2 to 3 hours during the day and unlimited time after 7 o'clock at night. Jared Franz is the transportation policy assistant with OPAL.
In talking to bus riders and members of the community, not only do people have a hard time getting where they're going on a single ticket, especially people like single mothers who have to make a multiple stop. Maybe they're having to drop off a child at daycare before getting back on the bus to go to work. But TriMet has been cutting bus service for years. Since 2004, they've cut over 170,000 hours of bus service. And so it's getting harder and harder for people to make their connections.
Jared Franz says TriMet has raised fares 70% over the same time period as they've made all those cuts to service. OPAL is organizing all kinds of bus riders, but they pay particular attention to low-income people living in outer Southeast Portland. Being transit dependent in the center of town is fairly easy. The grocery store, the post office, is a quick bus ride away. But in outer Southeast, things are spread farther apart, so bus rides are longer. The bus also comes less often, so people living in those neighborhoods spend more time waiting at bus stops. Walking is often not an option, because not only does outer Southeast not have good bus service, some streets don't even have sidewalks. If a trip to the grocery store takes longer than 2 hours, it could cost $5 for an all-day pass. Again, here's Jared Franz of OPAL.
Going to the grocery store and home on one ticket is getting harder and harder to do, and people are being forced to buy an expensive all-day pass for a very simple trip. And that sort of fare pricing is inherently inequitable, because it means that a person who is consuming very little transit resource, only going a few blocks down the road or maybe a mile down the road, picking up groceries and coming home, is paying as much or more as somebody who is traveling all the way across the metro area for a longer amount of time. And by simply extending transfers, we can reduce the burden on low-income people who depend on the bus for quick daily errands and reduce the physical and mental health stress on people who are having trouble getting one way.
TriMet uses fare increases and service cuts as a way to balance their budget, which has had persistent shortfalls since 2009 because of the faltering economy. They receive much of their revenue from payroll taxes, which have been lower than usual in recent years. TriMet CEO Neil McFarland calls the current situation a budget crisis.
Over the last 4 years, we've actually reduced our budget trajectory by $60 million at TriMet. That was through the Great Recession. So we've had to make some reductions of both bus and MAX service over those last 4 years. And I think people are generally telling us enough is enough related to service cuts. But they did tell us that there is some tolerance for increasing fares. And so our recommendations rely more heavily on fare increases than they do on service reductions.
But TriMet has also predicted budget crises before, which have never actually happened. Con Pham, who is now working towards her doctorate in urban planning at PSU, was the communications director of OPAL last year. Talking about her work with the organization, she calls TriMet on their bluff.
The budget crisis that they projected never materialized. They were basing it on projections that didn't turn out to be true. And those super conservative projections ended up having to be borne by the most vulnerable people who couldn't afford the fare cuts that it turned out we didn't need.
Jared Francis' job is to crunch the numbers. He is also dubious that TriMet is currently in a true budgetary crisis.
Even if we conceded that there was a budget crisis, there were other ways of solving it besides raising the fare all the way to $250 for everybody and getting rid of zones, eliminating the free rail zone, and cutting service.
Jared Franz says that one way TriMet overestimated their budget crisis was by doubling the amount of money they put aside in a contingency fund, raising it by $10 million.
We thought that that was unreasonable and actually made up half of the budget crisis that they were claiming, that they were essentially playing a game of double insurance. They were raising rates, they were raising fares, and they were cutting service to control costs, and setting aside twice as much money in an emergency fund.
And the budget, which came out in early March of this year, shows that TriMet received $28 million more in revenue than they had predicted. But there will be no new service cuts, although service will not be returned to pre-2012 levels. Even so, TriMet executives are receiving pay raises totaling almost $1 million, even though TriMet management told the public that they were in the middle of a three-year pay freeze. According to a recent Oregonian article by transit reporter Joseph Rose, TriMet drew from the contingency fund to give out $910,000 to non-union workers. That means upper-level management, because most of the bus drivers are in the Amalgamated Transit Union. Meanwhile, McFarlane is threatening to cut the generous health benefits that drivers get for being members of the ATU. Drivers over the years have passed up pay raises in order to keep their benefits. The people at Opal are very much aware of the contradictions in TriMet's budget, and last year proposed an alternative budget which would leave bus service at 2012 levels. TriMet did not go ahead with the proposal, but now Opal is working on other efforts to make transit more accessible and affordable to the people who need it most. They're working to retain a citywide program giving Portland Public School students free bus passes to get to and from class, which is in jeopardy of being cut. They're working to get transfer times extended from 2 hours to 3. And they're trying to reinvest in outer Southeast Portland.
Well, what I would like to say is to all of you who are out there who are transit dependent, who depend on the bus to get to work, to get to school, to get your groceries, to get to the doctors, please join us. We need masses of people to go before the TriMet board to also convince TriMet that we do count, we are out there, and they need to give us back our service, and they need to have better quality service and better customer service.
People need transit. People need to have reliable transit, and people need to stop having to have worse transit because TriMet knows that they're a captive audience. They know that they can cut bus service and some people will be forced to stick around, and that's something I'm not ever okay with, and I'm not okay with people misunderstanding. I think transit-dependent people need a voice, and TriMet needs to recognize that, and everyone needs to recognize that.
This is Jennifer Kemp with KBOO Portland. Special thanks to Eric Klein for help with production, editing, and script writing.
Hey, all you hip cats and kittens. This Thursday, dig this crazy live radio play at the Clinton Street Theater. KBOO presents the world premiere of the musical radio play 10 Cents a Dance. There'll be song and dance, murder and mayhem with a solid cast led by Rebecca Kilgore, fresh from the Big Apple, and a swinging orchestra led by Ali Ippolito. All of this live on stage at the Clinton and broadcast on KBOO live. Written and directed by Dennis Nyback. A program of film shorts from the 30s and 40s will follow, all set in radio stations. See Cab Calloway, Kate Smith, Rudy Valli, Mel Blanc, Lucille Ball, and those Jumpin' Nicholas brothers. So hoof it on down to the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, this Thursday, April 11th at 7 p.m. for the KBOO Radio Pictures presentation of 10 Cents a Dance. Advance tickets available at brownpapertickets.com.
There's a grave crisis happening just off the southern coast of the United States. The hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay prison camp has entered its third month, and reports say men have lost between 30 and 40 pounds, some slipping in and out of unconsciousness. JTF Gitmo officials call the hunger strike a weapon that men are using to manipulate the system. Join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, on a deeper look this Thursday morning, April 11th, at 9:30 a.m. It's a day of action to close Guantanamo and end indefinite detention. I'll be joined by Pardis Cabrillai of the Center for Constitutional Rights. That's the Guantanamo hunger strike and the day of action, this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
This is Cecil Prescott of More Talk Radio. Even the most ardent death penalty supporter does not claim that capital punishment is a deterrent to crime. We know that it's not. We also know that innocent people have landed on death row. But what else do we know about the death penalty and its history in the U.S.? Join me and my co-host Celeste Carey this Monday at 8 a.m. for the untold history of the death penalty as we speak with Stephen John Hartnett, author of Executing Democracy, Capital Punishment, and the Making of America. That's this Monday, April 15th at 8 a.m. here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to broadcast live from the Inner City Blues Festival, Saturday, April 13th from 7 to 10 p.m. Healthcare for All Oregon is throwing a party called the Inner City Blues Festival, Healing the Healthcare Blues, in the Groove of Love. Northwest Blues Stars are returning for a night of music that will benefit the work of statewide coalition Healthcare for All Oregon for universal, affordable healthcare for all Oregonians. KBOO is proud to help sponsor the Inner City Blues Festival to take place Saturday, April 13th at the Melody Ballroom, 615 Southeast Alder. Doors at 6, and KBOO's live broadcast starts at 7. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Inner City Blues Festival 2013.
Good morning and welcome to this Troublemaker in Training's broadcast of Political Perspectives. I'm your host, Robin Ryan, and today's program is about the day-long conference designed as a skill builder for combating the tactics of privatization at Portland's first Troublemaker School this weekend. There's a growing conflict between commerce and community as the European push for austerity gets tried on here in the States. A coalition of labor advocacy groups have assembled an agenda chocked full of activities and exercises conceived as tools to better prepare the working rank and file for the upcoming and on-site battle for a livable wage. The voices on today's show are all guests to our city, arriving specifically to be on hand during the collection of workshops. That list includes Director of Labor Notes Magazine, Mark Brenner, Sarah Chambers, who's a Caucus of Rank and File Educators member in Chicago, veteran negotiator and author Joe Burns. But first, we're going to hear from Stephanie Luce, Professor of Labor Studies at the City University of New York, who spent some time building solidarity between labor and community for the Occupy Wall Street movement.
We know wages play a huge role in explaining inequality in the U.S., and it affects inequality in several ways. So we have some policy tools to address it, and those can play a role. But the fact is, these policy tools are only as powerful as the social movements behind them. And they're really not, there's not policy to address these wage distribution questions and the maximum wage. And there's where I think we can really think to look to Occupy Wall Street for this more bolder social movements that we need to really address wage inequality. And I think, you know, in a way we can return to this, notion of the concept of a living wage and take apart that term. The idea of the wage is a kind of a technical term and an economic term, and there's a lot of calculations we can do to say how many calories do people need to survive, what are the average rents that we need to, you know, be able to pay. And those are important, but I think we shouldn't get too bogged down in the technicalities. There's never going to be one right answer as to what's the exact, you know, perfect minimum wage and so forth. I think we need to focus a lot more on the concept of living and what do we want our lives to be like? What should our world look like? And this is where I say we can look to Occupy Wall Street, because what we've really done, I think, what we've really seen Occupy Wall Street do is kind of combine these two elements. One is defensive struggles. Occupy Wall Street has been going out and doing strike support, defending people against foreclosures, really fighting to maintain the gains that we've made. But it's also insisted on this prefigurative notion to say, what is the other world we want to have? To say, what kind of world do we want to build?